When I decided to quit my job and go back to school 3 years ago, one of the things we realized we could do without was cable. Since then, we've learned to make the most of our Netflix subscription. We've watched every season of our favorite shows, and we've done extensive research, including articles like 23 Best Movies on Netflix You Haven't Seen. Somehow this past week, when we are trapped inside and the rain wouldn't stop, we stumbled onto Disney movies. We started with Mulan, the female heroine who disguises herself as a male soldier, busting through gender barriers and saving the Chinese from the Han invasion. Then on to James and the Giant Peach, based on the classic by Roald Dahl. I sat in awe as I watched, largely because I saw so much resonance between the film and what I was working so hard to write in my sermon. I'm sure many of you know the story. The film begins with a young boy, James, enjoying a delightful birthday picnic on the beach with his parents. They share a sense of wonder as they look at the clouds and see in them camels and train engines and the tallest building in the world. They dream about traveling to New York together. The next thing we know, an angry rhinoceros gobbles up James's parents, and his innocence is gobbled up too. James is stuck living with his mean and terrible aunts, Sponge and Spiker. They make him do all the chores, robbing him of his childhood and starving him of love and friendship. One of the most moving scenes to me was when James rescues a potato chip bag from the trash can, eats the crumbs left in the bottom of the bag, and then turns the bag into a scraggly piece of paper where he can draw his dreams. He proceeds to fold it into a little vessel, and he sends it floating out the window of his room. Moments later, James is trying to protect a spider he has befriended. It is Roald Dahl, after all. He meets a man on the edge of the yard who knows his misery. The man hands him back the vessel he floated from his window, points him to the magic inside of it, and tells him he wasn't meant to be miserable. Thanks to the wonderful creativity of Roald Dahl, James and his friends set out on a magical adventure inside a giant peach, which becomes a floating vessel of another sort. They face many struggles and challenges along the way, and just when they think they've reached New York, James must face his fears when the rhinoceros that gobbled up his parents shows back up in the dark clouds. James overcomes his fears and lands the peach on the spire of the Empire State Building. Only he has no idea he's landed on his dream, because he's right on top of it. Isn't this life? We tell stories like this to children all the time, but we, the older children in the room, still need these stories too. To some extent, we have them. Journey and pilgrimage stories are something people of all backgrounds and traditions have been drawn to as long as there have been people to tell them. The Greek epics, the Odyssey, and the Iliad are two ancient poems we've all studied in school. We follow the adventures of Odysseus as it takes him 10 years to make the journey back home to Ithaca. He isn't even recognizable at first. He's been gone so long and lived through so much since he was last home. These epic journeys have been retold and remade again and again. One of my favorites was the Coen Brothers' loose rendition, "O Brother, Where Art Thou?" Perhaps you have your favorite epic tales. In fact, I know you do, since I danced the time warp with many of you on Friday night at the Rocky Horror Show. I hope you made sure to pick up your participation packets on your way in. Journey and pilgrimage stories are one of the ways that we try to make meaning in our lives. All of the world's major religions have them as part of their narrative. Some Buddhists make the journey to Bodh Gaya, where the Buddha is believed to have received enlightenment. Hindus are encouraged to make pilgrimages during their lifetime, though almost any place can be the focus, with most destinations being sacred cities, rivers, and mountains. I love the multiplicity of the sites and paths in the Hindu traditions. I think this plurality of paths has something to teach us. Muslims are expected to go on pilgrimage to Mecca, called the Hajj, at least once in their lifetime. Making the journey is one of the five pillars of the tradition. Sadly, over 700 were killed during this year's Hajj just a couple of weeks ago when a stampede occurred, reminding us that holy journeys are dangerous too. Of course, there are examples in the Jewish and Christian traditions as well. Exodus, exile, the belly of a big fish. But why? Why do we go on these long journeys, sometimes risking our very lives in the process? And more to the point of what I want to focus on this morning, what do these external journeys reflect about the epics inside ourselves? Any one of you who has experienced great loss or love, suffered from depression, engaged the help of a good therapist, or simply grew up, probably knows a tremendous amount about this wandering, circling, searching, finding path. I don't know about you, but my own journey seems to be one in which I am circling around the same struggles, insights, and dreams over and over again. I've certainly circled around confidence and anxiety about self many, many times at this point, daily probably, and sometimes more often. When I discovered the work of sociologist and educator Parker Palmer nearly 10 years ago, and specifically his book, A Hidden Wholeness, it was as if a light bulb went off. You know, sometimes you already know something in your gut, but then you hear someone say it and you want to shout, yes. Given your own experience of being human for however many years you've been at it now, I imagine this will sound familiar to you too. In describing our current culture, Palmer suggests, quote, we live in a blizzard of sorts. It swirls around us as economic injustice, ecological ruin, physical and spiritual violence, and their inevitable outcome, war. It swirls within us as fear and frenzy, greed and deceit, and indifference to the suffering of others, end quote. We don't have to look past the last two weeks' news to get a sense of what he is describing. Another mass shooting took place in Oregon, with the religious wounds apparently playing a significant role in the shooter's mind. And of course, unfortunately, there have been more shootings since. Russia, under the leadership of Vladimir Putin, has begun carrying out airstrikes in Syria, trying to defend the reign of Bashar al-Assad, likely exacerbating an already overwhelming refugee crisis. A Doctors Without Borders hospital in northern Afghanistan was the site of a U.S. airstrike that killed 22 patients and medical staffers. Add to that the disaster still unfolding in our own state. We know what it's like to live in a blizzard. Palmer suggests we have lost sight of the soul in this blizzard in which we are living, defining the soul as that life-giving core of the human self with its hunger for truth and justice, love and forgiveness. Many other words and phrases can be substituted for the soul. Philosophers have called this core of our humanity by many different names: the big self, or original nature, the spark of the divine, identity, integrity, the true self, inner teacher, or inner light. These are a few ways humanists, Buddhists, Quakers, Jews, and mystic monks like Thomas Merton have pointed to the same idea. Perhaps another way of describing soul resonates with you. The point is, we have lost touch with this core of ourself. Instead of being connected to the soul and letting it guide our lives, we live divided, trying to live up to the expectations and projections that have been levied upon us. If I were to translate this into Pat speak, I would use the terms oneness and two-ness, like he did in his sermon last week. I would only say my topic is about oneness inside ourselves instead of two-ness. This isn't perfection or anything of the sorts. Rather, it's embracing brokenness as an integral part of life. I don't know about you, but I can feel the difference in these two realities as much as anything. I know what it feels like to be divided within myself. And thankfully, at times, I know what it feels like to stand in the fullness of myself. Part of the work is recognizing the wisdom, the oneness inside of us. Part of it is having people who will journey with us, holding space for our souls, our true selves, our wisdom to emerge. I just love the part in James and the Giant Peach when the man shows James that the magic is right there in the vessel he created. Wholeness is inside of James already. He's shown himself able to turn garbage into dreams, only he doesn't know the magic is there. He needs help discovering it. He needs help discovering himself. Sometimes it is great pain, great joy, or great love that awakens us to this inner wisdom. Sometimes it's the second half of life that leaves us unsatisfied with success and the projections of purpose. We circle around our truths over and over again before we realize that we are sitting right on top of them. When I tell my own story, be that in short or long form, I can see how I've been circling around some of the same questions of identity and vocation since childhood. I knew at a very young age that I was a tomboy. I pressed against the gender norms of dance lessons, lace dresses, and Barbie dolls. I felt free and alive on the ball field, not really understanding why I had to switch to softball with only girls at age 9. I tried to follow what was expected of me by dating boys with a couple of awkward relationships in high school and then subtly avoiding them for a long time, unconsciously for the most part. I was still very comfortable anytime the topic of relationships came up in any shape, form, or fashion. I knew I was not meeting expectations in this category. I was single in my 20s and early 30s, trying to figure out how to be okay with myself. This was long, slow work. I first had to acknowledge the anxiety I had about myself and how that was keeping me from being able to relate to myself and to others. I learned how to befriend silence, stillness, and Saturday morning Sabbaths. I was gradually making room for myself, though I had no idea this was what I was doing. The sleeping giant of sexuality was still looming, lying dormant-ish within me as I tried to keep desire away. Finally, I fell in love with Maria, and scales slowly began to fall from my eyes. I have struggled as I gradually embraced this love for myself, excited, alive, scared. I eventually told my truth, always fearing the response I would receive. This has been a circling, spiraling road. I have been gradually accepting, celebrating, and embracing my truth, my identity, myself. This is my story, but I am sure that you have your own. Things you've been learning over and over again, yet with some new insight each time around. Parts of yourself you're still struggling to accept. I've done this with vocation too, circling around being a pastor for at least 2 decades now, not sure how it would fit together with my identity. Slowly walking down the path anyway, when it wouldn't let me go. Did you know that as teenagers, Maria and I both felt called to be pastors' wives? If you didn't know, she's the chaplain at Furman. Thankfully, we've lived up to that calling. Clearly, this journey is not one I've been on alone. I've had the gift of good mentors and friends who have held up mirrors for me and helped me muster up my courage. None of us can make these discoveries alone. We need the help of friends and loved ones who will help us give birth to ourselves. Not by doing it for us or fixing our problems, but by being our midwives who stay with us in the pain and darkness of being born. Might I put in a plug for your covenant circles? As I was learning more about this fellowship, I was delighted and awed to learn about them. I almost could not believe the synchronicity of the circles and the sermon topic I had chosen. They are essentially based on this same book by Parker Palmer, A Hidden Wholeness, and the ground rule of no fixing, no saving, no advising, and no setting each other straight comes from him. The circles are designed to offer space to one another for soul, for oneness to emerge. If you're not involved in one, I would encourage you to consider joining a covenant circle. Plug over. Why bother? Why do the hard work to understand the epic inside ourselves? Why focus our attention inwardly when the needs are so great in this world? Well, whether we like it or not, we project the feelings we have towards ourselves out into the world. If we accept ourselves, we show acceptance. If we hate ourselves, we show hate. One way we love and heal the world is by loving and healing ourselves. At least part of the pilgrimage towards wholeness, the path towards recognizing the oneness in all things, is doing that work inside ourselves until we realize what Billy Collins calls the perfect simplicity of being one.